almost 9 o'clock Pacific, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is called Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, left opinion, and counter propaganda. Have you been out to the Occupy ICE camp? Do you know where it's at? It's at the ICE dungeon, which has been fouling this town for many years now, and is at the intersection of Bancroft, Southwest Bancroft, and McAdam Streets, right by the freeway. And the Occupy ICE camp confronts what's going on there. And it's on a rail easement for a trolley that is now owned by TriMet. And it is a pretty well-organized camp, and it's a large camp, and it's a defiant camp, and it's a glorious, glorious thing. And you can go there and not get arrested because it's not ICE property. So there's nothing they can do in terms of kicking people off of that land on that basis. The ICE occupation has a KBOO booth because we're KBOO. That's what KBOO does. That's what community radio is for. We were there in 99 in Seattle. We were there at Occupy, and we're there now because this is a significant and historic event. And at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, an artist is going to set up an installation. This is Amy Sitar's, full disclosure, this is my friend and housemate. She has created an installation that uses bronzed children's shoes to reflect the horror of Trump family separations. You remember bronze family shoes, or maybe you've seen them. I'm old enough that somewhere in my 84-year-old mother's cabinet somewhere is a little tiny pair of shoes covered in bronze that represents, you know, my babyhood, and it's a sentimental thing. But this is a whole lot of shoes. It's a whole lot of shoes of different child sizes. And, of course, it reflects similar installations which have decried various other horrors across the world. This is different in that it has that and other aspects which draw the attention and make the point. And at 3:30 at near Occupy ICE and near the ICE building, within view, let's say, of the ICE building, this installation will go up. And so I encourage you to come view the piece and show your support for art as activism, and to show your sentiments about separating families, something that's ongoing. And that's why I'm bringing this up. This is the point. Trump did his best to take that off the activist agenda by signing an executive order, as if he needed to go that far. But he is still moving forward with his no-tolerance policy. A judge has put another crimp in it, but those thousands of children are still somewhere in dungeons in the United States, somewhere in cages. And if that tugs at your heart, then you're a KBOO person. And if it doesn't, good Lord, you need help. Good Lord, you need healing. I don't know what to say about you. But it's still happening, and therefore people are still confronting the ICE compound. Now, there is good news also in the world, and part of that is the Mexican election. The way it's been covered, or not covered, in the U.S., you might think that it's a minor thing, a curiosity that happened far away, but as Greg Palast has been pointing out, this is a very significant event because this man who was elected, Andres Obrador, he is Bernie Sanders of Mexico, and he tried to get elected several times. He's been trying to get elected for 12 years, and the powers that be, the capitalists, have done anything and everything. In this most recent election, I think the number is 130 dead. It was a hell of a fight. And but it isn't just the presidency. There's governorships, political positions across Mexico have been filled by AMLO's party, and AMLO is a acronym for his name, last name Obrador. And this has important repercussions for your life and my life, because we came that close to getting Bernie in, and the Democratic Party had to scam like hell and steal votes in California and steal the election from Sanders in California to prevent him becoming president. So there's some parallels. So to comment on this further, I've turned to Amir Sadr's commentary in La Jornada. And La Jornada is one of the better papers in Mexico, and you can find it online, lajornada.mx. And so what I've done is sort of alter a rather clumsy machine translation. I will present this in English, and I hope you'll bear with me and get the gist of it. Commentary on the election of Obrador by Amir Sadr in La Jornada. In the neoliberal era, he writes, the right does not have policies that can capture the sympathy and support of large sectors of the people. They can win several elections and govern while managing to convince people, while supported in the monopoly of the private media, that the problems of the countries and their entire populations would be resolved by cuts in the state resources. But then the vast majority realized that this would not lead to answering the needs of the great majority, but on the contrary, of the minority, of the bankers, the big businessmen, and the speculators. And here I would already depart from what he has written and say, those policies are for the richest among us, and it isn't really just the 1%. It's about 9%, 9 or 10% really benefit from cutting public services. Why? Because they've got a couple hundred thousand to live on. They believe that this is a meritocracy. It's something that is repeated constantly, even in the products that they buy. You know, they buy all these smart products. That's code for, you know, you're a superior person. You know, you eat smart popcorn because you're so superior. 90% of us are harmed, and we are coming to know this. But returning to the commentary by Amir Sadr and La Jornada, from that moment, from that realization, the left was in a position to conquer the support of the vast majority of the population, proposing a program that went in the opposite direction, in the priority of social policies to respond to social inequalities. They proposed programs in which the state invests more resources, but in economic development and in meeting the rights of the people. The failed experiences of the neoliberal restoration attempts in Brazil and Argentina demonstrate how that is always the program of the right. That is a project failed in the 1990s. That's what the right has to offer. And again, speaking for myself, this is also true of the United States. In Brazil, he writes, for example, in the contrast between the close to zero support for the government of Michel Temer, whose fundamental reason for lack of support, according to the same polls, is its neoliberal economic policy, the majority of Brazilians support Lula da Silva, returning to be president of Brazil with a proposal of resumption of the anti-neoliberal model. These facts confirm absolutely the correctness of that approach. In Argentina, the great attrition of the government of Mauricio Macri is due to the economic and social consequences of the policy of fiscal adjustment, cutting clearly towards the neoliberal. When the left succeeds in placing their opposition at the center of the political debate between neoliberalism and anti-neoliberalism, expressing the central confrontation of our time, the left becomes the hegemonic force in the country. The left becomes a hegemonic force in the country. Commentary in La Jornada by Amir Sadr. Continuing, in Mexico, he writes, the election of Andrés Manuel López Obrador has not focused on that polarization, but the central part of its government program is the reactivation of the economy and social policies of redistribution of income and combating unemployment, strong features of leftist governments. In Colombia, the triumph of the right occurred because that force managed to maintain as a central factor the issue of the rediscussion of peace negotiations, but with a strongly anti-neoliberal approach. Gustavo Petro led the left to the second round of the presidential elections for the first time in the history of Colombia. In Ecuador, the loss of support for Lenin Moreno's government is due, in every way, to the turn of its economic policy in the direction of neoliberalism. And I have to again explain, because we don't use neoliberalism in that way in this country. He's referring to laissez-faire capitalist policies, Republican policies. So I could say to the turn of its economic policy in the direction of of Republicans to in the United States. But to return to his text, it's due to the reverse of the success of the government of Rafael Correa. The government of Evo Morales, in turn, maintains policies clearly for economic development, accompanied by social policies that guarantee a majority support of the Bolivian population. In the neoliberal era, the left has very favorable conditions for building their own alternatives and succeeding. The strength of the right is more ideological, seeking to shift the agenda of the social issues to that of the criticism of the state and the proposals of the style of consumption like the central objective of the life of people. The left can triumph, he writes. It can triumph again if it manages to project an ideal of life and society focused on attention to the rights of all in solidarity. In the collective construction of a just society, if you win the consciences, the soul of the people, it achieves that for the whole of society. The left should take as its objective the deep democratization of society. He writes, if they succeed in incorporating women into politics, young people, blacks, the most absent so far, if it manages to systematically combat the mechanisms of alienation in society, if it manages to awaken in the vast majority of the population the class consciousness, the national conscience, opening spaces so that the young people express their identities, that will rescue the popular interest for another form of making politics than the traditional one. The left would lose a unique historical opportunity if it fails to constitute itself an alternative to the right in the neoliberal era. So again, that is a commentary in La Jornada. And that was written by Amir Sader. And it really makes me think, I hope it makes you think, because I do feel that turn, and when I go out to the Occupy ICE camp 4310 Southwest McAdam, I see a very interesting phenomenon. I see people really getting it. Huge aspect of the hopefully temporary triumph of Trumpism is his brand of whiteness, of his technique of pumping up whiteness without defining it. And so I encourage you to go to the camp and see this phenomenon of white people going to confront this fascistization, this targeting of brown people, and observe that the leadership of the camp is people of color. That's significant. That is where the power is. That is where the power is for white people, for the 90%, for us to observe, understand, confront, and deconstruct our whiteness, and to take the leadership of people who have had the most to lose under whiteness. That is where the power is. That is why this camp, Occupy ICE PDX, is so significant. You can find tweets about the camp on Twitter. The hashtag is OccupyICePDX. And by the way, that's one of the better ways to communicate with me on Twitter, at KBU Press Watch. On Twitter, at KBU Press Watch. I'm also on Facebook. It's Teresa Mitchell. There's, if you look at the little icons, mine is the one with the little upside-down cat. Maybe that'll save you some time. Little upside-down cat face. Because I like cats, too. How could I not in the internet age? You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning at 9:30, it's not yawn and ignore the empire. It's not roll your eyes at the empire. It's not give up on the empire. No, at 9:30, it's fight the empire. Paraphragering updates the strange case of Sergei and Yulia Skripal. And you'll want to pay attention to that because it's a strange story. Curiouser and curiouser. At 10 o'clock, Eric Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, always relevant. At 10 o'clock, excuse me, at 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, author Poe Ballantine talks about his new book, Whirl Away, The Great American Loony Bin, Horseplaying and Record Collecting. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk talks to Northwest writer Renee Sims about her new collection of stories, Meet Behind Mars. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. If you understand how powerful it is to have, in these times, an alternative voice, go to kboo.fm and donate. Better yet, think of someone you know who is as sick as you are of being directed to mainstream thought, who feels confined and confused by the propaganda coming out of the corporate media, and tell them about KBOO, because we don't have billboards all over. And we largely spread by word of mouth and by people using a vernier dial on an old machine and finding us broadcasting. There's a wonderful thing, a wonderful aspect to terrestrial broadcast, and that is you're not being tracked. Isn't that nice? You know, as long as your devices aren't there listening to it, which is something they can do, even when you don't want them to, but you can tune into KBOO. You can listen, you can think, and no one needs to know but you. You and your earphones. That each one reach one thing, I think, is very important. We're going to be raising funds again in September. The context, I can't overemphasize. The fascistization has resulted, in part, in the great internet engines steering traffic away from organizations like KBOO, steering the traffic away from the left, claiming that it's fake news, that it's hooked up with terrorists. They claim all sorts of things, but really steering you away from looking out for yourself and for the people around you, steering you away from doing the right thing, steering you away from thinking clearly. That is why you need KBOO. That is why you need terrestrial broadcast. And so when I bring this up every week, I bring up websites. And once again, I don't necessarily agree with everything in these websites, but you need to know about them. You need to pull up theguardian.co.uk. You know, The Guardian is disgustingly imperialist when it comes to that realm, but to that context. But excellent when it comes to criticism of U.S. society. And some of their reporters are fantastic. I've met one of them, a black man who realized that to keep his children safe, he would have to remove them from the United States. Guardian.co.uk. WSWS.org. The Trotskyists. Some excellent writing, some excellent journalism. And their Trotskyism right there on the page for you. They're not trying to hide that. WSWS.org. You're being directed away from these sites. This is why I'm telling you about them. Alternet.org. 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 CommonDreams.com. CommonDreams.com. InTheseTimes.org. InTheseTimes.org. So many more. Don't let the corporations steal your brain. Now I have some more good news. And this is from theguardian.co.uk, where these things are discussed. You're not going to find this today on CNN. But in a primary last Tuesday, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a 28-year-old left-wing activist and Sanders organizer, defeated Joe Crowley, a 10-term House Democrat and potential contender for speaker in an outer borough New York district. Ocasio-Cortez told CNN after her win, "We're in the middle of the movement. We're in the middle of a movement in this country. I feel this movement, but that movement is going to happen from the bottom up. That movement is going to come from voters," end quote. Now, I just mentioned that CNN didn't cover them, and what I mean is they dropped that story like a hot potato. You're not going to hear a lot of follow-up on CNN from this, but they did cover it. Progressives hail the win as proof of a growing grassroots movement. Quoting Ro Khanna, the only member of Congress to endorse Ocasio-Cortez, and I would say unlike the Democratic Party, which is terrified of her, quote, "Just like in 1916 when we saw the beginning of a progressive movement in response to the Gilded Age, I believe the Trump era is going to bring a progressive renaissance in this country," end quote. Continuing, Ocasio-Cortez, Khanna said, is a harbinger of that new progressive movement. And they write, "And yet for a Democratic Party in search of a new identity in the Trump era, her victory has offered little immediate clarity." When you knock off somebody like this, is a quote of Jim Kessler of the centrist think tank Third Way. When you knock off somebody like this, he refers to the defeated Democratic Party candidate. It's very significant and doesn't happen by accident. But he added that Ocasio-Cortez's win was less an endorsement of her left-wing ideology than a reflection of Democratic voters' current preference for fresh faces and female candidates. And I want to depart from that text and say that he was lying. That's obviously anyone who spent even a moment looking at what people said and who voted for Ocasio-Cortez understands it was an endorsement of her socialism. 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 God, I love saying that on a 25,000-watt transmitter. It was an endorsement of her socialism. Returning to the text, on Sunday, the Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth suggested Ocasio-Cortez's left-wing politics could alienate moderate Midwestern voters. Duckworth told CNN State of the Union, "I think that you can't win the White House without the Midwest, and I don't think that you can go too far to the left and still win the Midwest. Coming from a Midwestern state, I think you need to be able to talk to the industrial Midwest. You need to listen to the people there in order to win an election nationwide," end quote. Now, that, of course, is who CNN would go to talk about this. And Duckworth is utterly wrong. You can win the Midwest with socialism when you explain what it is, when you understand that Ocasio-Cortez is a socialist because she cares about people and because she understands that programs can be instituted that relieve the terrible economic maldistribution of wealth. That's redundant, pardon me, that relieve the maldistribution of wealth. And that's what it's about. That's what Occupy was about, which was a huge movement, and which people like Duckworth would prefer that you forget. Duckworth, by the way, if I'm remembering correctly, is one of those people who unfortunately got their limbs blown off fighting for imperial oil wealth, and therefore she is viewed as a hero. I view her as a victim, and kind of a metaphor for the sorry state of U.S. politics. Returning to the article about, and try to remember this name, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because you're not going to be hearing it much on the corporate media. Pledged support for Medicare for all, tuition-free public college, backed a federal jobs guarantee program, and called for Congress to abolish immigrations and customs enforcement. That earned her the endorsement of the Democratic Socialists of America, a fact upon which the Republicans have duly seized, claiming her win shows Democrats have moved too far to the left. On Sunday, Ocasio-Cortez also appeared on the talk shows. On NBC's Meet the Press, she was asked how she would sell her views to an older generation of Americans perhaps afraid of the S-word, meaning socialism. She responded, "It's part of what I am. It's not all of what I am." And I think that's a very important distinction. I'm an educator, I'm an organizer, and I believe that what we're really seeing is just a movement for healthcare, housing, and education in the United States, end quote. And The Guardian writes, Bill de Blasio agrees. The mayor of New York backed Crowley, but in a statement issued after Ocasio-Cortez's win, he said the Democratic Party was in a deep and fast process of change and declared its future to be decidedly progressive. Until Tuesday, progressives had achieved only a handful of notable electoral successes while suffering losses in Virginia, Ohio, and Iowa. But there are other signs their message is resonating. A third of Senate Democrats, including many prospective 2020 candidates, and more than half of House Democrats supported Sanders' single-payer health care plan. Calls for minimum wage are widespread, and many have adopted the anti-Wall Street rhetoric that was the trademark of Ocasio-Cortez's campaign. And the House Democrats must gain 23 seats if they are to take the majority. As primary season nears the home stretch, the party has expressed confidence in a crop of contenders who have emerged in the battleground districts. And departing from the text, what the Democratic Party is trying to do is the same as their failed strategy in Philadelphia in the summer of 2016. And that was to sneer at social change and to insist that only their centrist, and that's centrist in the context of a rabid right-wing swing since 1980 in the United States, only their centrism can win. And that's a reflection of the fact that they depend on the rich to get elected, the rich who pay for their extensive multi-million dollar media buys. They depend on the Republicans setting the range of acceptable discussions, and that's why they're so frightened. They were so frightened of Sanders. that they stole his election in California. They're so frightened of Ocasio-Cortez that they're talking her down after she won clearly in that New York district. But it is good news that Ocasio-Cortez won, and Sanders would have won. And those 23 seats could easily be won. That's something I think that people don't realize. And as disgusted as I am with the Democratic Party, it's necessary to go to the polls and to do everything that you can with that intentionally limited instrument, I think, and express your opinion, because it's the Republicans really are ruling from the minority, and that is the start of what they intend to do. I mean, if you support that, then basically you support apartheid rule, the rule of the wealthy whites. Because they didn't lose the presidency by 300 votes or 3,000 votes or 30,000 votes or 300,000 votes. They lost the presidency by 3 million votes. This is rule by the minority, the gerrymandering that puts the majority of Republicans in the House is rule of the minority. And now they are packing the Supreme Court. There are things that can be done about that. And I want to encourage a fight back. Because if you agree with the Republicans, then if things are going swimmingly for you. But I think it's very brittle. I think that the Republican rule right now is very brittle, because once people realize how easy it is to slap that down, they will do so. And it's very important to do so. Now we're getting towards the bottom of the hour. And I want to go to a few pieces of headlines, news you're not supposed to know. The one I want to pass along here is a little strange, but I think that the more you think about it, you'll understand that it is a significant change in lived experience. Article by Stephen Chin in SCMP.com says that China has developed a new portable laser weapon that can zap a target from nearly a kilometer away, according to researchers involved in the project. And if you go to scmp.com, you can see a video that shows how effective the rifle is. The ZKZM-500 laser assault rifle is classified as being non-lethal, but produces an energy beam that cannot be seen by the naked eye, but can pass through windows and cause the instant carbonization of human skin and tissues. 10 years ago, its capabilities would have been the preserve of sci-fi films. But one laser weapon scientist said the new device is able to burn through clothes in a split second. If the fabric is flammable, the whole person will be set on fire. According to a researcher who had taken part in the development field testing of a prototype, the pain will be beyond endurance. The 15mm caliber weapon weighs 3 kilos, about the same as an AK-47, and has a range of 800 meters, or half a mile, and can be mounted on cars, boats, and planes. It is now ready for mass production, and the first units are likely to be given to anti-terrorism squads in the Chinese armed police. In the event of a hostage situation, it could be used to fire through windows at targets and temporarily disable the kidnappers while other units move to rescue the captives. It also could be used in covert military operations. The beam is powerful enough to burn through a gas tank and ignite the fuel storage facility, say, in a military airport. Because the laser has been tuned to an invisible frequency and produces absolutely no sound, quote, nobody will know where the attack came from. It will look like an accident, end quote. Consider this. This is a change in warfare. And, of course, people in the U.S. will be clamoring to get their hands on these things. It'll be interesting. I would like to encourage you to start thinking about it now, because, in a sense, this is not a firearm. This is a device. It doesn't shoot projectiles, and I don't think it should be covered by the Second Amendment. But I think people are going to claim that it should be, because it looks like a rifle. And finally, as the ICE occupations go on across the country to protest the horrific separation of children, the continuing separation of children from their parents and their incarceration in cages, police have arrested a woman who climbed the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty in a 4th of July protest against the Trump administration's immigration policies. That was yesterday. The climber huddled at the base of the monument, according to an article by Joanna Walters, again in TheGuardian.com. about 30 meters above the ground, 120 feet, and engaged in a four-hour standoff with police before two New York Police Department officers climbed up the base and apprehended her. And the coverage of that, including on CNN, tried to emphasize that it was her fault that the whole harbor had been shut down and that there were 30 police and that it was expensive. And this is a perfect example of a mendacious showboating stunt in which you are encouraged to be afraid of dissent by the excessive reaction to it. And this is done by riot police as well. Well, Parafoggering is ready to come in. We've come to the bottom of the hour. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And I'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Parafoggering and all the ships at sea. You've been listening to Press Watch, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. To hear previous shows, go to kboo.fm/presswatch.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to broadcast the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. KBOO will be broadcasting the festival from noon to about 10 p.m. every day, and will be broadcasting throughout the state on Oregon Community Media radio stations from Ashland and Astoria to Warm Springs. Again, that's the 31st annual broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th, noon to 10 p.m. or so, every night at Waterfront Park in Portland and on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.